Hello, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey, and this is After the Bell, our special segment after the Commodity Week show of March 30th, 2007, where the Planting Intentions Report and Quarterly Grains and Stocks Reports were released. And on the panel, we have Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Vince Renicky of Strategic Farm Marketing. And the question that I have for you, a free-for-all question, when you looked at all the numbers and then talked to the people in the field and talked to traders in Chicago, what do you believe will have the longest impact of everything we saw on Friday?
Well, I guess to me that's probably an easy one, and that's the fact that we're up about 6 million acres overall when you figure all the ones that they report for the spring. They don't report necessarily all the small grains, but hay and corn, soybeans, wheat, major crops, oats. Now, if that's telling us that we've added, you know, we've went out here and added some acres that we hadn't produced on before, that's, from a long-term standpoint, that's kind of a big deal. I go back to, you know, it's a planting intentions report, and I'm not sure that, you know, what they extrapolated out of the farmer surveys necessarily tells us that, and we'll see when we get to the final report in June. But that's kind of a big deal if that's true.
Both corn and wheat acres were up while soybean acres were down. Where did those 6 million acres come from?
You know, I think that my answer to that's going to be the one that I've, I guess, given for a while, and that is that, you know, you hang a carrot like this out in front of farmers, and you're going to find everything they can find. And I mean, you know, and it's a big carrot hanging out there. You know, you're talking about, I had one producer when we were sitting down talking about crop insurance. He said, "You mean I can guarantee $125 an acre profit on corn?" Yeah, well, if that's what your costs are and that's what that's what it says. And when you do that, you know, you're dangling a huge carrot. And when you do that, like I said, you're going to find everything they can find. So,
what are the implications of a corn crop that's potentially 12.6 billion bushels? Do we have the infrastructure to handle a crop like that?
I don't think so right now. I think that's going to be the quandary. I think that's why you see new crop basis as wide as it is. I mean, I've been in the business only 5 years, but growing up on a farm, I've never seen new crop values basis-wise this weak this early. And obviously, people are in anticipation of a large crop. And infrastructure-wise, obviously, we need to handle this much. I don't know if we can at this point. Space is being built every year, but I don't know if it's enough to accommodate 90 million acres of corn right now.
If you assume what the acreage report said, though, you've got, you know, some of those are going to, it's going to be spread out over a wider period of time as well, and I don't disagree with you, but you know, we're going to see some southern crop come in early, probably. You know, there's been times where that's actually come up the river instead of going down. But a lot depends on how our planting logistics are, I believe. If we can get that crop in the ground early so we've got some time to get it out, that can sure make a difference. But if it's a late spring and we have a wet crop, it even compounds the problem that Brian's talking about.
Brian, what does what implications does the corn crop, the larger corn crop, have on the bean basis, you think?
Well, the bean basis, obviously, I think you're going to handle whatever has the biggest carry. And if beans get drawn down like everyone projects and we only plant 67 million acres of beans, then obviously we're not going to be at full carry or close to full carry anymore. So you're going to carry, from a commercial standpoint, the best crop that has the best value to you. And at this point in time, it looks like corn's going to be the winner in that. So bean-wise, they're going to be squeezed out of the equation. Probably won't carry them as long. And you're going to make every crack of space available to corn. So,
but will that show up really until we get into the new crop?
I don't think it will. I think, you know, you're talking about anticipation. Is corn a problem now? No, it isn't. I mean, we've got constantly moving grain into the pipeline. I talk about April, May being a dry up in the pipeline because farmers are busy. You have to really entice them to move it. So how does the processor, the end user in the southeast, the chicken, the hog farmer, how does he satisfy his needs during that two-month window from the commercial? So space isn't an issue now, but it will be as you get into new crop, and I think corn will take precedence over that.
It just seems to me, though, that, you know, you're probably going to, just with the sheer quantity of crop you're going to have to handle, unless you add a decent amount of space, you're probably still going to have to deal with a pretty wide basis on beans, number one, because of the major supply or the extreme supply, oversupply that we have right now, and then number two, the fact that they're still there, you know, and then you've got all this other corn to deal with too. And that's what I'm curious about. You know, right now you don't have a decent basis level on beans all the way until perhaps next January or next February. And even then everybody's a little bit, you know, hesitant to offer you much to sell something. And I'm just a little worried about what implications beans might have, you know, through the corn.
Well, I agree with you, Vince. I think that you're right, and the basis probably on both is going to stay wide until we reduce this record supply we have. And how long that takes to happen is anybody's guess. And I think space is an issue, and you're probably correct in realizing that there isn't going to be much space to handle corn, let alone these beans. So you're right in any regard that most of the three major commodities that we handle, wheat, beans, and corn, are going to be wide. I could tell you right now, not to get off the subject of what we're discussing, but wheat basis doesn't look pretty right now either, and it's not going to be, because you talk about all this corn. Last year we saw along the river points, smaller facilities, smaller space. They didn't even want to mess with it because there's no good demand. Now, I've heard recently that we're starting to become more of an option for soft red wheat in the export. We're looking more attractive. But this past year, we haven't done much business. And because of that, they're not going to want to handle wheat to have to carry it with minimal space. So we could see dollar unders at the river point again for wheat basis.
I'd like just play the devil's advocate a little bit here, because I think, you know, one of the things that's probably the worst thing that a producer can do out here on a day like this, and it's pretty easy to do, is just sit here and think that it's dire straits and there's nothing good ever going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we can sit here and believe that this market is completely over for the year and that we're never going to see any more surprises, because we will see some more surprises mm-hmm. before the year's out. And even from a basis standpoint, I think if you start looking at some kind of reduced yield numbers out here sometime mm-hmm. during the year, that's going to change the outlook and the thought process on that, although probably not as much as it would on the futures price. So I think it's, you know, a farmer shouldn't necessarily go out here and panic and throw in the towel. I think he's got to be prudent. Hopefully he's been prudent as he's gone through the past 6 months here, but he also needs to be realistic as far as what really has occurred today hasn't changed the picture all that much. When you're talking about 2 million more acres of corn than we thought, 300 million bushel, you know, I'm not sure that that's has changed the picture completely out here.
Well, and just to reiterate my point, I guess, in commenting to you, Bill, if I was from a producer standpoint, I guess from my point of view, I agree with you. Long way from being over. I'm nowhere near being bearish on either commodity right now. But for the simple matter, if a customer or a producer has to look at one component of his cash price right now, basis is the one I'd be most worried with. You have the ability to see futures rise or climb rapidly, more so than basis. It's going to take a pretty good drought, or not drought, but just a lack of moisture where it would suffer that yield to make the basis want to improve, because we know we're going to plant more corn at some extent, whether it's 7 million or 10 million or 12 million acres, it doesn't make a difference. We're going to have more corn to handle. So I guess from my standpoint, the component I'd be worried most about right now is the basis.
And I don't disagree with that. And I think especially if you've got to deliver corn at harvest time where you have no choice, really. I think that you've got to look at the proper way to lock in price mm-hmm. levels and do that with, sales basis contracts with puts under them or something like that.
Sure. Did we learn anything new on Friday from the quarterly stocks and grains reports regarding ethanol and ethanol usage?
You know, I don't think we learned anything terribly new that maybe we weren't already expecting. I guess, in our office, some of the discussion was, well, it actually come out a little better than I expected, a little lower. You know, stocks come in a little bit lower than we expected, because we kind of, I guess, had in the back of our heads that DDGs perhaps displaced more than what it looks like they have. But, you know, when you look at the state-by-state breakdown, too, you can certainly tell where the cattle are. when I say that, I mean Nebraska is holding a lot of corn. Producers are holding a lot of corn. Iowa is holding a lot of corn in the producer's hand. Minnesota, Wisconsin, those with more cattle to feed, more hogs to feed, those are certainly the ones that the farmers holding more corn. And we think that's indicative of the fact that they want to make sure they've got something to cover their feed, you know, going into this next year. So realistically, it didn't tell us anything terribly surprising other than, well, we're not using it quite as fast as we thought we were.
Or the possibility exists that maybe that January report, the final production report, was inaccurate and we raised more than we thought we did last year. That's probably likely, too.
One of the scenarios I've been thinking about a lot lately, if you are in the northern Corn Belt, is whether or not come September, before the crop is put to bed, whether or not ethanol facilities up in that part of the country are going to run out of feedstock. Will corn need to go up the river, and will they bid up basis in the northern part of the Corn Belt to make that happen?
Well, I think that's surely a possibility. I think one of our big central Illinois processors for years has imported corn out of Iowa at a cheap rate. And you know what? In the next few years, Iowa's going to become a net importer of corn. So I think basis down the road, if we have a weather issue, think of it this way. We haven't had a major weather issue in a long time. And statistics probability, eventually, we're going to have something like an 88. I'm not saying it's this year. I'm not saying it's next year. But down the road, we're going to have an issue where things can get hot. And the person that needs it the most, which is the ethanol industry, they seem like the biggest supporter or the most tolerable of higher prices at this point, the last to be cut from a demand standpoint. They will bid up if they need the feedstock.
And I would ask just a simple question. If you look at today's activity and today's numbers, if we believe this is a demand-led market, which I believe it is, did we increase demand today or did we decrease it? We probably, with what we saw happen, we probably increased that demand again. If you look at the ethanol just from a number standpoint, the numbers are looking pretty good again.
I was going to suggest that earlier, Bill. I was going to celebrate a little bit because my ethanol stock should get better a little bit sometime here soon. But nonetheless, I think you make a good, very valid point there. And that is that, our ethanol margins are getting wider as we talk about crude on the positive side, ethanol perhaps on the positive side, and corn prices down. And so that's certainly something to remember. Now, whether or not, whether or not that means in the long run that we still – of course, our cattle feeder is still our feeders are still our major corn customer, and we have to certainly keep that in mind. And when I say major, I mean, not by just a little bit, but by 100% or whatever at this point. Now, that doesn't mean that down the road we won't change that, but some of those ethanol facilities that perhaps got put on the back burner because maybe it's not quite as good a deal as it was 5-6 months, whatever, however long ago. Maybe this action will perk that industry back up a little bit, or at least the thought that maybe we'll add a few more ethanol plants.
One of the interesting things that I've been thinking about too is if you're a corn producer and you're also a stock investor in ethanol facilities, what prices are you rooting for?
I think you're caught in a conundrum, Dave, because right now from our vantage point, you're dealing with customers. At the same point, we're a company that's invested in ethanol plants as well. I have one in Albion, Michigan, one to come online in Clymers, Indiana, third one that's being currently constructed in Greenville, Ohio. So obviously from our standpoint, we're trying to minimize price risk, help producers gain as much value out of their operation as possible. But at the same time, as a consumer myself, I'm sitting here thinking, I want gas prices to be as cheap as possible. But from a company standpoint, I'm thinking, go oil, lower corn. And I'm thinking, now I'm rooting for higher gas prices. Your head's spinning. So, yeah, you're caught in between and you're trying to root both ways once in a while.
But really, the best thing is if we can have corn $3 to $3.50, I think both the ethanol producer and the farmer can do pretty well there. We're not going to bring
the
these,
feeder, too. Works there, too.
We're not going to bring these extra acres in here that we don't really need probably long term. Mm-hmm. And we also aren't going to have the input skyrocket and, take away the profit levels.
Sure.
It's a weather market, right? between now and planting, and then it'll be a weather market through the summer through pollination to see if we get this crop actually pollinated. That can drive you crazy if you're a producer, because it's going to be volatile, and prices are going to go up and down. They were limit down on Friday. They were limit up off the January report. You're going to see more huge moves, I would suspect, as traders dissect every weather report. What should producers do for peace of mind in order to mitigate risk and be able to sleep well at night?
Well, let me, if I could, just throw in the first thing, and then I'll pass it off to whoever else wants to take it. But number one, I think if you bought your crop insurance, that's got to help you sleep at night. And I say that if it's a revenue-based crop insurance policy. You know, you locked in the 406 that on Dees corn or 809 on Nove beans that were offered to you. And, you know, if we diverge from those a great deal on the downside, well, that's certainly you've got protection there. You bought your put option essentially in the form of crop insurance. So that's, in my opinion, that's number one. If you did that, then you at least did that right. And, you know, from there, you know, certainly options and everything else. Some of these guys will probably comment on that.
Well, I just was going to add to Vince, the first thing you could do, obviously this is an opportune time to look at options. Obviously, they've been very highly priced due to volatility, and a nice break in the market is exactly what a guy, it may be a good opportunity to either buy a put, or if he sold the cash grain, buy a call for the protection. I mean, you got downside, you got upside. So that's something guys might want to take a really hard look at, especially if we continue to slide and see a better opportunity to do that. And like Vince said, crop insurance, biggest plug this year. Never been able to guarantee this type of money this year. Hopefully, the majority of producers were able to take that out.
Vince, was that the case in your shop? The people you worked with, did they flock and take that crop insurance?
You know, actually, we had a lot of we thought perhaps this year that we'd see a little bit of a disinterest in crop insurance and spending as much money as, you know, a person would have had to, or, you know, will have to, I guess, at this point. But at the same time, we didn't see as many people blink as we thought, mainly because they saw the value in it. The price you're locking in, the dollars per acre with the revenue you're locking in, it's pretty hard to operate without some sort of protection, and that's it.
We saw the same thing. I agree with Vince on that. I was almost surprised somewhat that we didn't see more people back away from it than we did. The other thing going along with some of the conversation we had earlier as far as managing risk, I think you got to start thinking about, and it's never too early to start thinking about your logistics, you know, and the infrastructure, and is your elevator going to be able to handle the crop when you get ready to take it in, and you really got to avoid getting forced into situations that you don't want to be in. I think that's really a key to trying to manage that third component that Brian was talking about on the.
I'm glad you brought that up again, Bill, because I was going to throw this in earlier when you guys were talking about it, but I guess that's why I originally asked the question, Brian, because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if there was a year to add storage, this perhaps is the one, as long as you understand how to properly manage it. And I don't just mean from the quality side of things. That, of course, is a major influence in your decision, but I don't mean throw it in the bin and hope the price goes higher, because I firmly believe those days are over myself.
Or throw it in the bin and want to get it out by January 1st.
Right. That's one of those things where you're going to have to understand, you know, how my hedges need to roll forward and maybe own basis and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of management things that have changed, I think, and certainly you need to face those head on as opposed to just, you know, letting them, you know, seeing where they might go.
Certainly with 406 cash corn prices, one could go ahead and put up a 50,000 bushel elevator for about, I don't know, $109,000, $110,000, and that thing would almost pay for itself in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree, Dave, and just like both Bill and Vince have reiterated, that space is definitely at a premium now, and if you can afford to put it up, it's going to pay. But like Vince said, you have to manage it. You have to build it in. A lot of guys chose to invest their extra dollars in 06 that they made in other areas, upgrading combines. I talked to a guy over at Berkey's here before the end of the year, say December. In 1 month in November, they had sold 10 combines already. So, guys were spending the extra money, tax write-off, whatever it may be. Benz may have been the bigger play in my mind for some things just because of the nature of space pain. You had beans with a full carry in just about the entire market. Now you're talking corn, a large crop coming on where basis is probably going to be relative to encouraging you to store that corn on farm. So, yeah, I think it's a good investment if a guy can afford to do it.
And manage it properly. And manage it properly.
And I think that the message that I'd have is that what we saw today doesn't necessarily change this overall picture. And this is kind of a long-term situation we're talking about. We've talked about, Brian's talked about on bases. I mean, that's probably going to be typical, as you see, if this demand stays with us on the expanded demand, is you're going to see a bigger crop come in at harvest time every year, and you're going to probably see lower basis levels, probably lower flat price levels at harvest, with a bigger comeback as you get into those periods where you see the tight supplies. And that's going to be some opportunity there, I think, is what really Vince and Brian are both saying here. But what we saw today didn't necessarily change any of that, unless you go back to maybe what I originally started with, this 6 million acre thing. That kind of bothers me.
Anything else you fellas want to add today?
You know, I guess my question that I'll just throw out there is, from those guys that are sitting next to me, you know, where are we? How close are guys to planting? I know, Bill, you're probably a little wetter up there. Brian, of course, we're not too far away. But at the same time, you know, what's the feel? What's the thought? I mean, where I come from down around Taylorville, like I said earlier, things, you know, actually got started earlier this week. Tuscola, somebody said, I saw a guy out plowing the other day or yesterday. You know, other than that, we haven't done a whole lot. And where are we at, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, from my area, my customer base, too, the worst area, wettest area, I guess that depends on whether it's going to be the worst or not when we see what happens,
yeah.
Is probably like that Pontiac across the Kankakee through there. They really got hit with some big rains last week.
That goes into Indiana, too, doesn't
well,
it?
Yeah, I think it goes clear across.
Perhaps even into Ohio. I don't know.
But. And, you know, like right there at Lexington, we're probably 10 days, 2 weeks away if you just had perfect weather before you could even think about doing anything. And then you get, you know, down in the southeast, southeastern Illinois and east in Indiana and some of those areas where they had trouble getting it out last year, they need some extra time, and they haven't – well, they're not in too bad a shape, though. They've got some fairly decent weather. It seems like the further south you go just in Illinois, the better off you are.
I'd agree with what Bill said, because I grew up in Ashkim, Illinois, around that neck of the woods that he's going through. So I know it's very wet up there. Milford and Iroquois County had something like 5 inches. But in relation to down here, we are a little drier. I think we've had somewhere around 2 inches, maybe a little more, give or take, in the Champaign area heading east and west. I think guys probably in the next couple of weeks, if they get a drier pattern, can get going. Generally, from our customer base, I would say 1st of April brings out a few people, but I think the week after Easter is like a target where a lot of guys like to get started. I think it's going to be somewhere between the 10th and 15th if we don't get any more rain. Now, the forecast continues to be periodically wet, and we haven't seen a week that comes through. The other valid point to make is that we're heading for the next 11 to 15 days to a cooler period. So the corn maybe that some of the guys in the south have got planted already, they may start to get a little worried. And I'm not saying it will happen, but they're talking low 50s, possibly into the low 40s at nights here in the next week or so.
Brian Stark of the Andersons, Vince Renicky of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. That's after the bell. This is Dave Dickey.